The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Washington Post and the News and Observer. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we'll be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Well, Halloween's coming up, and you know what that means. Yep, time for our annual haunted destinations on Armchair Traveler. And we're going to begin with checking into a haunted hotel. Here's how to make the most of it. This story written by Liz Langley, and it appeared in the October 29, 2021 issue of the Washington Post. When I was a kid, my dad occasionally took me to the Casadega, about an hour outside of Orlando, known to some as the psychic capital of the world. We went for the message services, events during which several psychic mediums deliver messages to members of the audience from the spirit world. Sometimes the messages don't resonate with the recipients, but sometimes they beam, nod vigorously, or even cry. Meetings are usually free, donations are considered polite, and there are snacks afterward. My dad liked going to message services in Casadega after Mass on Sundays, which could have been a matter of scheduling, but I think he just enjoyed loading up at the Belief Buffet. Catholic enough to have been considered the priesthood, he also loved philosophy and divination and believed in extrasensory perception. Now, I never got a cogent message at a service, but I do think I had a brush with the other side many years later at the Hotel Casadega. During a stay there in the early 90s, I had been told that the heavy Victorian clothing worn by early inhabitants made body odor a sign that a spirit might be near. My friend Stephen and I spent the night, and as we were leaving, an unmistakable smell suddenly hung heavy in the room. I like to think we had a visitor from the great beyond. Since then, I've visited or stayed in 8 allegedly haunted hotels. I vacationed to get away from real life, and a brush with the dead is as far away as it gets. I've always enjoyed myself, despite having a few actual encounters with the supernatural. Well, now, some will say that's because ghosts don't exist, to which I say, do not rain on my jack-o'-lantern. That sort of whomp-whompery is not in the holiday spirit any more than mentioning the divorce rate in someone's wedding toast. Like a good scare? Well, here are 5 haunted hotels with stories fit for true crime files. This is the time of year when most haunted lists abound. Some hotels and tourist sites have long-established reputations, such as the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado, famous for being Stephen King's inspiration for The Shining, or the Hollywood Roosevelt, where Marilyn Monroe once lived and reportedly continued to appear after her death. There are plenty of wares, so I consulted some ghost hunters, researchers, and authors on the hows of reaching out to spirits and what you may need to detect and record otherworldly encounters. No one wants to come face-to-face with a ghostly apparition and think, now what? Well, Brandon Alves and Mustafa Gadolari are co-stars of the A&E series Ghost Hunters and co-authors of Elements of a Haunting, Connecting History with Science to Uncover the Greatest Ghost Stories Ever Told. Both say attitude is everything. Respect is the key, Alves says. If we believe ghosts are people, a conscientiousness retained after death, or a consciousness, I should say, we're going to want to treat these people with the same way you would treat everyone in everyday life. Now, Gadolari suggests channeling that feeling you have when you go on a first date or you're meeting your spouse's friends for the first time. You put your best foot forward, and don't lie to yourself about your confidence level. If this seemed like more fun when you were eating kettle corn and watching it on TV, you should reckon with that. He adds, ask yourself, can I honestly have fun and feel good while getting done what I need to get done, which is a paranormal investigation? Well, everyone can get freaked out, says Rich Newman, author of Passport to the Paranormal, your guide to haunted spots in America. Via email, by all means, leave the area if you need to, he advises, but get right back in there as soon as you can. You're a ghost hunter. It's also okay to own being more of a curiosity seeker than a ghostbuster. In 2018, my friend Susan and I creeped out while exploring the 19th floor of the Lord Baltimore Hotel, where a spectral presence rumored to linger. We did not persevere. We went back to our room and ordered pizza instead. In the morning, the pizza box had ejected itself from the trash and was sitting on the desk. Of course, it's easy to get scared when the pop culture we've all grown up with depicts ghosts as mostly scary or even demonic. Carol Nesbitt, who co-founded Ghost of Gettysburg Tours with her husband Mark, says that's really quite rare. Most ghosts are mischievous or pleasant, not harmful, she says. Mark was a ranger for the National Park Service at Gettysburg National Military Park in Pennsylvania before going into the paranormal. His own supernatural experiences at the Civil War's bloodiest battlefield led him to write more than 20 books, including Haunted Crime Scenes, Paranormal Evidence from Crimes and Criminals Across the USA. With Catherine Ramsland, a forensic psychologist at the Salles University in Pennsylvania. Remember the creepy house from The Silence of the Lambs? Well, now it's a vacation rental. The co-authors advise doing heavy pre-trip research and asking employees for advice. Bartenders hear a lot, Ramsland says via email, while Mark says cleaning, maintenance, and security staff can be the best sources for unusual happenings. I asked Mark why there were so many ghosts at Gettysburg. I've always thought it was counterintuitive that ghosts are alleged to appear at the scene of horrific events. Why not go where you're happy? Why aren't the beaches and dance clubs choked with specters? Well, Mark thinks it's a matter of emotional resonance. For most of the combatants, he says, Gettysburg was the biggest thing that ever happened to them in their lives. After all, the survivors returned to the site even in their 80s and 90s for the battle's anniversary. Why wouldn't they go back when it's easy to travel as a ghost, he says? Ghostly gadgets. The Crescent Hotel and Spa in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, has plenty of hot spots, including its own morgue, built in the 1930s when it was a hospital run by notorious medical fraud Norman G. Baker, who was ultimately sent to prison for peddling a bogus cancer cure. Its most famous ghost is Michael, a 17-year-old stonemason who, according to the lore, fell to his death in 1886 while trying to wave to a girl. Michael still likes the ladies. Ghost tour supervisor Deborah Workman says if a person staying in room 218 takes burst photos of their sleeping female companions, sometimes you have nothing in the first two pictures, but then in that third picture, there's a hand. The property typically runs 5 to 8 ghost tours a day. That number shoots up in October, and Workman says some of their guides use electromagnetic field, or EMF meters, to detect the presence of spirits. Others prefer simpler gear for detecting disturbances to magnetic fields. I always recommend a compass, Alvis says. How else can you detect an unseen presence? Well, Gattolari says an electronic barometer can come in handy. We can check the timestamps of the event, and sometimes it correlates to a decrease or increase in barometric pressure. Motion detector lights are inexpensive ways to alert you to a moving object you can't see, just like they do in your driveway. Now, Carol Nesbitt goes even lower tech, preferring to use a pendulum, which conveys information from spirits depending on which direction it swings. Any necklace or even your car keys can work, she says. Or you can just take Fido along. If they allow pets, you should bring your pets, Mark Nesbitt says. One of my favorite haunting trips was to the Gisborne Inn in Apalachicola, Florida in 2009. Upon our arrival, I noted a little dog in a jeweled collar who absolutely refused to go from the lobby up the stairs, which is where the alleged hauntings were. Alas, none of my researchers recommend my beloved Ouija boards. For one thing, people use them and then forget to say goodbye, leaving portals open. So who knows what can come in like raccoons to a dog door. Well, in 2021, it's the smartphone that roundly recommended as the perfect ghost hunting tool with a quality digital voice recorder, camera, and a couple of features that can enhance what you capture. Make sure your phone is in airplane mode, Alva says, to keep outside cell phone and radio frequencies from contaminating your audio recording. Workman suggests transferring photos to your computer to enhance the view. You may catch sight of something you missed on the tiny phone screen. Not surprisingly, there are almost too many ghost hunting apps to scroll through. Carol Nesbitt recommends iOvalus and Ghost Radar, which I tried because it was free. The interface looks like a green radar screen with a needle turning in circles. My luck hasn't been stellar with these sorts of things, but right out of the gate, something weird happened. Ghost Radar caught a blip in the southeast corner of the room. The app shows one word at a time at the top of the screen, and mine said, parent. Then it started rapid firing, FJ, 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 in the upper, or I should say lower right-hand corner of the screen. FJ are my dad's initials. The word parent was replaced by pride. Coincidence? I don't care. My dad would have loved this story. The app said some other things that didn't seem germane, and I turned it off for once in my life, satisfied with what I had. It may be nothing, but I just like the idea that my crazy, loving, proud dad finally figured out how to work a smartphone. Well, we're going to check out of the haunted hotels and now head for Chicago, where we find curses. Take a terrifying tour of six haunted objects. Now, this story was written by Christopher Borelli for the Chicago Tribune. It was published in the October 24th, 2023 online issue of the News and Observer. You know about Wrigley Field, cursed by an angry goat owner. Perhaps you've heard the curse of Kaskakia, a once bustling town near Missouri that was briefly the capital of Illinois. What happened was, so says an old racist legend, a French fur trapper in the 18th century, upset that his daughter fell in love with a local Native American boy, found the boy, and drowned him in the Mississippi River. As the boy was dying, he condemned Kaskakia to be reclaimed by nature. The story is apocryphal, but Kaskakia certainly looked doomed forever after that. It suffered crop failures, flattening tornadoes, and even an earthquake, though the final blow came when the Mississippi reversed course in the 1860s and ate at the town's banks until it fell into the river. Kaskakia still exists, but according to census figures, the population is a mere 17. Maybe you even know the curse of the former John Hancock building on Michigan Avenue, hexed by George Streeter, whose boat ran aground near its land in 1886 in what we now call Streeterville. Now, Streeter declared himself a sole ruler of the area and never light on trouble. He passed in and out of jail for everything from selling liquor on Sundays to murder. By 84, he was reduced to selling hot dogs at a stand on the Calumet River, and as he died, Streeter cursed his old Chicago home. That curse has been used to explain 90-story falls, spider infestations, improbably broken double-pane safety windows, the overdose of Chris Farley, who died in his apartment there, and the death of a 12-year-old actress, Heather O'Rourke, whose final movie, Poltergeist 3, was filmed in the building. But here's the thing. Those are cursed places. Typically, curses are ascribed to objects, dolls, mirrors, paintings, songs, even emails. This being Illinois, home to some of the nastiest episodes in American history, we have plenty of cursed and haunted objects. The stuff of the damned, so to speak. The Field Museum owns screaming mummies and floating coats, supposedly. The Chicago History Museum has a mysterious stone carved by unknown hands. In tempting fate for a second year, curators hid 13 haunted dolls throughout its galleries, a scavenger hunt that runs through November 5th, and that would have been in 2023. Many a guard at the Art Institute will tell you about paintings appearing to move in the corner of their eyes, always in darker galleries. And that's just Institutional Archival Chicago. Ask Charlotte Walters if she has anything cursed or haunted, and she doesn't know where to begin. She opened the Lost Era's antique shop in Rogers Park in 1969. Like other antique store proprietors, the purchases purchases entire estates, some of which carry negative energy. Now, people think of this cursed object thing as a joke, she said. It's not a joke. We have had people return items who do not want their money back. They just didn't want a spooky item in their homes anymore. Now, recently, she bought the estate of a man who collected memorabilia of the radio drama The Shadow. As she and an employee were unboxing items, they found a wax carving for a shadow ring, and Walters, using an old catchphrase joke, "The Shadow Knows." Well, at that instant, the lights went out, a glass flew off a shelf, and we freaked. I'm afraid to touch the thing now. Well, her son, Casey Walters, runs Cora Violet Auctions with his wife, Cora. "My mother is more convinced about cursed objects than I am," he laughed. "I'm pragmatic." Well, long story short, Casey and Cora recently bought leather boots at an antique mall in the suburbs. Now, at home, as Cora slipped her foot into the left boot, they heard a loud crack like a bone snapping. Cora jumped. Soon the house filled with a horrible smell that came and went. As they began to investigate, a pair of curtains ripped up one side, books flew off a dresser, and there was a scratching sound, Casey said. Despite being in the antique business, they rarely bring home antiques, so Casey decided to store the boots on the second floor of Lost Eras. But when he peeked back into that storage space soon after, the room was just as showy mess, he said. Those boots haunt a landfill now. Well, the good news about curses is that should you need to place a curse, Chicago has you covered. There are several occult stores in the north and south sides that sell oils, dolls, brimstone, even graveyard dirt, everything required for a decent hexing. The bad news is many curses are explainable, said David Paul Smith, a Chicago psychologist who explores the science of the paranormal as a hobby. He describes many cursed objects in benefiting from an inverse placebo effect. Invest enough negativity in an object, you fixate on bad luck. And yet, if enough people believe an object is cursed, maybe it's not in their heads. A medical physical explanation is still out. What's certain is that curses and hauntings, being legends, overflow with selective truths, iffy facts, hearsay, and, most commonly, a general equating of bad vibes with evil. Well, here then are six histories of Illinois-centric objects thought by some to be cursed, haunted, best avoided, or simply responsible for raising the hairs on quite a few necks. Bill Stoneham was a young Chicagoan, adopted, haunted by what life might have been like with birth parents. He lived at his grandmother's on South Shore Drive, which was strange, she recalls now, at age 76. "My parents slept in a Murphy bed, and I slept in a closet." Now, at age 5, someone took a photo of him alongside a neighbor girl holding a doll. Later in the 1970s, as a nascent artist in California, Stoneham sold a moody painting titled "The Hands Resist Him," modeled on that photo, replacing the girl with the doll and adding handprints to the door behind him. He sold it to the character actor John Marley, who's best known for waking up with a decapitated horse head in The Godfather. Within a year of selling the painting, the gallery owner who showed it had died, as did the Los Angeles Times critic who had reviewed Stoneham's painting. Marley lived another decade, but eventually, when the artwork turned up on eBay in 2000, it came with a disclaimer that it was cursed, and its figures moved. Online rumors went viral. Stoneham had seen his image as representing a doorway between worlds, what is and what might have been. But he had no idea what was being said about the painting until he began to get emails from people who viewed it online and associated it with childhood trauma. Soon after, he also learned he had a sister, Spooky, as he doesn't know the girl in the photo, who was not his sister, but he now thinks of her in mysteriousness as a sign. He still lives in California and gets emails from people all over the world saying his artwork unsettles them. He replies that anyone who looks at it will die. He is certain. And as for the painting itself, well, it was bought on eBay for $1,025 by Kim Smith, owner of the Perception Gallery in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He still owns it, but doesn't show it. When I do, people laugh until they see it, then they go silent, and somehow it's creepy. As for Smith, well, at 71, his health's good, and since his purchase, oh, I've had mostly good luck, he adds. One of the best places in Chicago to freak out is a store in Andersonville named Woolly Mammoth. It's a self-described curiosity cabinet of the unnerving, a gothic cornucopia of death masks, mummified cats, Victorian wreaths, and a skull or two. Haunted Mary, a fairly standard human skull with a bit of unexplained red paint around the eye sockets, was acquired by Woolly co-owner Adam Rust earlier this year, again 2023. Its former owner, JoJo Baby, an artist and fixture of Chicago's drag scene, died in March 2023 at 51. Rust doesn't know the identity of Haunted Mary, but he discussed her a while back with JoJo Baby, who bought it, Mary, at a New Orleans thrift shop and insisted often the skull was haunted. Now, to ward off some bad energy, JoJo Baby would leave offerings for Mary. Russ continued the practice. Now, Mary sits under a glass dome, which visitors lift to deposit loose cigarettes, candy, tampons, even an occasional Narcan nasal spray. Not that it's helped. Soon after installing the skull, security cameras showed a box of photos jumping off a shelf and scattering in the middle of the night, Russ said. Then a customer sent him an email saying that after she visited, something followed her at home, and ever since, she's dreamed about looming taxidermy. Well, at Woolly, looming taxidermy, I should say, is their thing. Now, as you know, catching a demon gets confusing. There are good demons and bad demons, and who's got time to sort them out? For instance, at the Institute for the Study of Ancient Cultures at University of Chicago, formerly the Oriental Institute, there are Neo-Assyrian figures of monsters used during the first millennium to ward off demons. Among those figures is Pazuzu, a lean-winged serpent thingy infamously misused by the filmmakers of The Exorcist. In the original movie, an amulet of Pazuzu summons forth a nasty Pazuzu. In ancient cultures, Pazuzu was actually a protection against evil. They got it all wrong, said Kirsten Newman, curator of the museum. But since a good museum covers its basics, ISIC, which is the Institute for the Study of Ancient Cultures, also has demon trapping bowls, several of which likely holds a demon or two, assuming they work. Now, there is evidence they did. Demon trapping bowls were made of clay, found mostly in southern Iraq, and used from the 6th to 8th century. ISIC has a dozen, and written inside each of them are incantations in Aramaic, Syriac, and Mandean. Sometimes the language is illegible, possibly because the writer was illiterate, Newman said, or because the text was intended to be read only by demons. At the bottom of each bowl is a drawing of a demon. Bowls were placed in doorways, courtyards, and beneath homes. Now, the creepy part. The bowls in Hyde Park were discovered, buried upside down, suggesting their owners did trap something, flipping the bowls to contain the demons. At the museum, though, the bowls are shown upright, and it sounds like a terrible thing waiting to happen, doesn't it? Well, Evil Otto is the bouncing, indestructible smiley face that appears in the old arcade game Berserk whenever a player takes too long to clear a wave of robots. The game was created by the late Chicago designer Alan McNeil for Stern Electronics and released in 1980. It was a hit during the brief, intense video game boom that built neighborhood arcades across the country, including Friar Tuck's Game Room in Calumet City, a place so friendly it had a Robin Hood theme, offered free donuts to parents, and set in a suburb with a cute landmark. Water towers painted with huge smiley faces, just like Otto. Well, according to urban legend, the Berserk in Friar Tuck's killed three people. Not true, of course. The first death, as the story goes, came after a 19-year-old entered his initials into the game, his high score being a satanic 16,660, then dropped dead. Well, that never happened. But this did in 1982. An 18-year-old from South Holland was playing Friar Tuck's Berserk well enough to enter his initials, then collapsed in the arcade and died. Now, according to a Tribune report at the time, a coroner found scarring on the boy's heart tissue, and despite no prior heart problems, it was decided any strenuous action might have been a catalyst. Then this happened in 1988. A 17-year-old was stabbed to death at Friar Tuck's by a 16-year-old. More apocryphal is the rest of the legend. Supposedly, the fight erupted after the older boy inserted a quarter left on a machine by the 16-year-old. Well, that game? Well, Berserk. As for the machine itself, Friar Tuck owner Tom Blankley, who closed the arcade in 2003, sold off the games, and he said he has no idea of its whereabouts. Ryan Grayface owns the Grayface Oddities Museum and Record Shop in Bucktown. It's an eerie place full of music, horror videos, sideshow specimens, with John Wayne Gacy artifacts. Now, there's also items from unusual estate Grayface brought a couple of years ago, owned by a late member of Cleveland's Church of Satan. Nearly 10,000 pieces, including business receipts, a coffin, and a massive occult library. Many of the books, Grayface said, are handwritten, full of spells. One has a literal blood pact with Satan. Until this, I'd never seen a non-jokey blood pact with the devil. Grayface has a friend in Cleveland who came across the collection and started to experience a rash of bad luck. He begged Grayface to take it. Grayface found sacrificial spells and instructions for skinning horses. Since he began displaying the book with the blood pack, customers have heard whispers, and when they take a picture of the book, Grayface said the images occasionally contain strange orbs of bright light. He doesn't know much about the original owner. Could all be innocent, but the guy was clearly up to something, he says. When Grayface opened the coffin, he found bottles of blood in it, a ram skull, and pentagrams painted on the inside. I mean, it was great, he said. Well, there is a book at the Newberry Library, so ugly and hated, even church leaders of the Inquisition considered it a bit over the top, according to Suzanne Carr Smith, Newberry curator of rare books and museums. Now, the title is Malleus Maleficarum. Though it's colloquially known, as the Hammer of Witches. Now, about 100 copies exist, but for years, throughout the 16th and 17th centuries, it became the manual for how to recognize, prosecute, and torture women as seen as witches. It was a common bestseller, a sort of slender FAQ for witch hunting. Now, before Malleus Maleficarum was first published in 1484, witchcraft prosecutions tended to have light sentences. In the decades after it was released, an estimated 50,000 women and some men were executed for witchcraft. It's full of invective against women, and women being the lustful source of problems, said Jill Gage, who specializes in the history of printing at Newberry. Though its origin is usually traced to a German clergyman, there is some dispute about the authorship. It's also one of the first printed books, and the Newberry copy, cataloged under legal procedure, is a first edition containing several strange burn marks, Carr said. So we know it was used. What they don't know is how the library acquired a copy or who owned it. But in 1985, when it was part of a Newberry exhibition about the Inquisition, the book was found to have rotated daily in its case, including one weekend of full 30 degrees. The library assumed the source was the rumbling from a passing CTA bus or at the building's heaters, but no other books in the exhibit had stirred. Malleus Maleficarum was never shown again. Curses. Ami, by the way, would you purchase a haunted house under certain conditions? Well, there was a survey done that Dean Gallagher of Men's Journal and his article published in the News and Observer, October 28, 2023, and it found a recent survey by Zillow revealed that a majority of potential homebuyers would have no problem purchasing a house they believed to be haunted if it reduced the price. It's a chilling display of desperation as the housing and loan prices continue to skyrocket. And that, my friends, is going to bring us to the end of today's journey of Armchair Traveler. We hope you've enjoyed it, and you'll be with us again next week. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you that the content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is also available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice, all one word, .org. Now, if you have any comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.